Innovation never takes a breather, even in front of a long holiday weekend and after a jobs report. And that means there could be new investing opportunities staring you right smack in the face. Who better to discuss the intersection of innovation and investing than Kathy Wood? She is, of course, the founder, CEO, and CIO at ARK Invest and joins us now for an exclusive chat. Kathy, welcome back to Yahoo Finance. Thanks for taking some time ahead of the long weekend here. I wish you could see my notes because I have pages of them. But before we get into some of your recent picks and things you've been buying, talk to us about a little bit about the labor report today. Came in below estimates. You know, is this the type of report where you have to take a step back as an investor and rethink any of the strategies you've been putting on?
Well, we believe there are three reasons that the employment report was weaker than expected. One of them is the Delta variant of the coronavirus. We saw leisure and hospitality flat. The employment gains there weren't any. That's a big change. We also know supply chain problems are at work here. Certainly, we're hearing a lot about that from the auto sector, many sectors. And we saw in manufacturing, the total hours worked were down 0.5%. So that suggests some possible supply chain problems, or, and here's where I think some people might be missing the mark. We think there is an inventory buildup out there, but the inventories, let's just take autos, for example, are not on dealer lots. I get a lot of people pushing back against the notion that there's an underlying weakness developing in the auto sector. And one of the main reasons we believe it's happening is because the inventory is in our driveways or garages. We spent the last year trying to avoid mass transit. So used cars went crazy to the upside, and as did new car sales, much stronger than expected. Now I think, however, there's another reason, and that is the consumer is thinking about his or her next purchase. Is it going to be gas powered or electric? And we believe that electric vehicle sales will be up more than 50% this year, perhaps much more than 50%. And that's a global number, while traditional auto sales are basically flat. It seems like they're going to be up very slightly, if at all, on an average annual basis.
Kathy, so let's stay on the auto sector. Of course, one of your top holdings in your funds is Tesla, and it's been a long time holding for you. Given the chip shortage that we have seen, are you concerned about Tesla missing any delivery estimates this year?
Well, it's if we're right on what's going on with the gas-powered vehicle sales, I think that auto manufacturers are going to be cutting back, and that will free up some of the chip supply that might have gone to gas-powered vehicles for the electric vehicle manufacturers who are growing dramatically here. So I've been amazed at the way that Elon Musk and team have been able to work around the chip shortage, because it's not just the most sophisticated chips, it's microcontrollers. So they've been, their ingenuity has been at work in terms of substitution. We know it's a scramble, but if we're right on what's going on with the traditional auto sector, the gas-powered part of the market, some of that chip supply will free up for the electric vehicle manufacturers.
Kathy, when you originally came out with your prediction on Tesla, I believe it was a $7,000 price target. Really, GM, Ford, Toyota, they weren't doing much in the electric vehicle space, but now that they are, I mean, look, Ford's electric pickup looked pretty cool to me. You know, how does that impact the longer-term growth profile of a company like Tesla?
Well, I think it validates it. According to our estimates, based on Wright's Law, which we can get into if you'd like, it's a relative of Moore's Law, we believe that electric vehicle sales will shoot up from 2.2 million units last year, looks like there'll be 3.6 or 3.8 this year, to 40 million in 2025 as electric vehicle prices drop below gas-powered car prices on a like-for-like basis. And our concern about that 40 million number was that other auto manufacturers were not responding rapidly enough. Now what has happened is China, with a big focus on the environment, is subsidizing electric vehicles aggressively, and the supply, therefore, is starting to shift up. So no, we think this is good news. It's validating this massive move from the internal combustion engine and gas-powered cars. We sold 80 to 90 million of them in the last few years per year, to electric, which, as I said, is at such a low base right now, 2.2 last year, maybe 3.6 or 3.8 this year, all the way to 40 million. I think it just tells us that the exponential growth trajectory is in place. And given the way China is subsidizing, we could be conservative.
Wow, interesting there. And just staying on that, Kathy, it's been an impressive year for Tesla. Several quarters of profits, U.S. business humming along, doing good business in China. To your point, I mean, do you see Tesla's fair value above 7,000, just given the year that they have had?
So that original number was on the old stock. We've had a 5-for-1 split. So our new number, our base case for Tesla with this on the split stock is 3,000. The stock right now is a little over 700. On the old basis, that would be 15,000. So what that tells you is our estimate for Tesla's success has gone up. And the main reason for that is their market share, instead of going down from year-end 2017 to today, has actually gone up fairly dramatically around the world.
Interesting. Kathy, before we head to break real quick here, I do want to ask you about one more name, actually a couple more, but one right here, Zoom. You were in the market picking up Zoom shares, if I'm correct, this week after that earnings report. Looked good. I think some investors were concerned about the slowdown there. What did they miss and what do you see?
Yes. So we think there's a transformation taking place in the communication sector. Many people think of Zoom as nothing more than these video sessions that you're on, you and I are on right now. But it's becoming much more than that. We think it's going to, with Zoom Phone, take over the PBX system. In other words, it is going to start taking more share of the communications stack in technology. And enterprise communications is a $1.5 trillion opportunity. And we believe that Zoom is on its way to usurping the role of players like Cisco, for example, in the years ahead. So it's a very big story. It is not just about video and stay at home or even hybrid. It's much bigger than that.
You know, is it partially, though, too, Kathy, a play on we are likely to be in this hybrid work model for 5 years, the next decade, who knows? And you know what? We may see more pandemics. Is that part of the play on Zoom?
Yes, but I really think that they're spreading their wings within the communications equipment realm, which, as I just mentioned, is the largest part of the tech stack, 1.5 trillion. We think they're going after that, and that one of the reasons they got their nose under the tent is because of what happened during the coronavirus. This was the best performing communications tool we had, any of us. I know I much prefer when I know that my next call is going to be on Zoom as opposed to one of the legacy players, because it just works better and the user interface is much better as well. So they got their nose under the communications equipment tent that way, and now they're just going to move forward very dramatically, we think, from there.
I do love Zoom. I've actually figured out how to use it on my phone. Talk some Robinhood. You sent the market for Robinhood in a little bit of a tizzy in early August, out there buying Robinhood, pushed the stock up to close to 85. It has come back down to 46 or so. Are you buying any more, and what is your thesis right now on Robinhood?
Well, as you know, Brian, we report our trades for the ETFs at the end of every day. So we did, we picked our spots when Robinhood came public. It fell to earth, and we picked our spots at that time. It's roughly a 1% position, and we're watching it. We're looking at the payment for order flow controversy. We know that Chairman Gensler at the SEC is looking at that. That's a large percentage of Robinhood's revenues, but we actually think that not much is going to change there because the system has been so good from an execution point of view for the end investor. So we'd be surprised to see a lot change on that front. But again, we're in a situation where we have to listen to what the SEC is saying.
Sure. And I think many would agree that Robinhood is, in fact, an innovative company. So I'm not surprised to see you involved with that name, Kathy. But if let's just handicap it, if payment for orders flow is banned, do you have confidence that Robinhood could pivot its business model and still innovate and make money like it has been?
Yes, we do. Robinhood is all about the user experience. And, you know, we've been pleasantly surprised at how many young people it has invited into the world of equities and options and so forth. I remember when my children were in high school and college, very few of them or their friends had any interest in the markets. But I think Robinhood has introduced a whole new genre to investing and thinking about their future and learning the hard way. Some have experimented with options, and you know, it doesn't take long to lose a lot of money with options, and they learn quickly. So I actually think Robinhood has done a great service to the investing community.
Kathy, I remember now you have me thinking back to high school. My teacher couldn't even get me to get the free Wall Street Journal subscription. I just didn't have any interest in it, but it's a different generation, to your point. You know, staying on crypto a bit here, Coinbase is another name that you hold as well. And some remarks this week by John Paulson, I think got a lot of people up in arms, so to speak, in the crypto community, saying that he views it as crypto is worthless. What do investors like that who criticize crypto, what don't they understand?
First of all, let me just finish up on Robinhood. They have pivoted already to crypto in a magnificent way. So just wanted to finish that one up. John Paulson is, he made an incredible call during the mortgage crisis. He has been a gold bug, I would say, for most of his career. And many investors who have spent their careers focused on gold cannot understand the digital concept associated with gold. What we think he's missing is this is much more than just a store of value or digital gold. Bitcoin in particular is a new global monetary system. It's a rules-based monetary policy, which is completely decentralized and therefore is not subject to the whims of policymakers. In fact, it's a hedge against the whims of policymakers, especially in emerging markets. And as far as other crypto currencies, Ether being the biggest, we're seeing the DeFi movement, decentralized finance. Again, Chairman Gensler is going to take a close look at it, which I think will be good. Let's just get the regulators on board, because at the end of the day, what we think decentralized finance is doing is taking the friction out of a lot of financial services and taking a lot of the middlemen out of financial services. So that is also a good thing. Other than that, you know, there's some... I don't know how closely John Paulson and some of the other naysayers have looked at it, but I know there have been conversions. Ray Dalio has been a conversion, Stanley Druckenmiller, and you know, these are very thoughtful investors who at one point thought Bitcoin was a Ponzi scheme, and in some cases, and have been converted. And I think one of the reasons they have been converted is when you think about what blockchain technology is doing, it is putting into place via the internet the payments ecosystem that was not put in place in the early days of the internet because it was never conceived with commerce in mind. It was for defense departments and intelligence. It was for academics. It was for information exchange, not commerce. When you fill in the picture with blockchain technology, all you're doing is saying, yes, there's a more efficient way of doing commerce. We just didn't know commerce was going to be a part of the internet in the 80s and early 90s.
Now, a lot of the crypto bulls, Kathy, they'll say that regulation is good for crypto. Are you in that camp?
I think KYC, AML, so know your customer, anti-money laundering is good for the ecosystem. I do believe that is true. I think what's confusing from a regulatory point of view is the different definitions of crypto depending on the regulator. So the SEC, in terms of Bitcoin, has described it as not a security. The IRS says it's property. The CFTC says it's more like a commodity. And I think if regulators get together and agree on what exactly these cryptocurrencies are, how to define them, that will be a good thing. Just certainty will be a good thing for this ecosystem.
And really underlying the move higher in Robinhood's shares, Coinbase, crypto markets, it's that rise of the retail investor, Kathy, and very much you have a loyal following of those retail investors. Looking out over the next few years, how important will the rise of the retail investor be and how and where the market goes from day to day?
Yeah, I'm going to give a shout out to Tom Lee from Fundstrat. He picked up on a study that Stan Salvixson, who was the chief strategist of Merrill Lynch in the 80s, when I was just coming of age in this market, Stan had a hypothesis that the baby boomers would make for 15 to 20 years of a bull market in equities. And that's what happened. It was a very simple assumption, and it played out beautifully. Tom Lee, I don't even think he referenced that study, but has taken the notion that millennials are the reason we're in a bull market for equities, and that this leg of the bull market won't end until 2026. And I think he thinks that the bull market, with some fits and starts after that, could actually extend to 2038, I believe it is, which is the year that the number of millennials peak. So this is the echo of the baby boom. I lived through the baby boom years and that equity market move. It was magnificent. It was a very simple assumption and it worked. And I do feel we are in the same place now.
And Kathy, too, lastly, before I let you go, just given everything you've achieved in financial services, the following you do have, you know, how do you feel when you hear there are people or short sellers betting against your funds?
Well, what I think two things. That's what makes a market. And, we're all going to have different points of view based on our own research. So I like the fact that, you know, markets are being made around this controversy. We want the controversy to be out there. What I found for years is innovation was avoided. Whether it was research or investing, there was less and less of it as our markets moved into more benchmark sensitive territories after the tech and telecom bust and then the 08-09 meltdown, so much so that analysts and portfolio managers felt they were taking a huge risk investing in a stock that was not in an index. Well, guess what? A lot of innovation which is all about the future, is not captured by indices. In fact, very little of it, we believe, is captured by the indices. And so I felt starting a business on that premise, to focus exclusively on disruptive innovation, would become productive. And it has, because we have never been in a period ever in history where we've had five major innovation platforms involving 14 different technologies, all moving into S-curves, the S-curves feeding one another. We're in a period of explosive innovation. And so, I think that as more and more investors and analysts do the research that we're doing, and we give our research away, we're happy for anyone.
I'm a subscriber. I've signed up.
There you go. So thank you very much, Brian. But we feel one of our missions and values is to educate, because we feel like there's been a dearth of education in the financial markets around innovation because of this backwards looking, benchmark sensitive style that evolved out of two crashes. So many people ask me, are we in a bubble? We couldn't be further from it. I do not believe that investors, the average investor, shall I say, understands how provocative these next 5 to 15 years are going to be as these S-curves feed one another and enter exponential growth trajectories that we have never seen before.
We greatly appreciate you giving us some time here at Yahoo Finance. I can tell you there are millions of people right now on our platform that are very excited to have seen you today.